Game recaps, athlete interviews, and everything in between. It's the Rudin Report, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sunday Morning Quarterback. I'm Dave Rudin. We have football to talk about, and not the speculative kind. Actual games midway through September, and here in Connecticut, we have 1 week's body of work, and it was an Alliance weekend. FCAC, 12-4 record. Friday night, they went 11-0, and we have a lot to unpack a team that finally ended a 61-game losing streak to unveiling a little, or just digging up a little possible controversy to the end of the biggest and most exciting finish of the weekend. Joining me as always, he was the catalyst to finding out and discovering what we're going to talk about, is my co-host, Sean Ireland. Sean, how you doing?
Do not throw me under the bus, but
yeah. I'm not throwing you under the bus. I'm giving you credit. You started me playing investigative reporter in my car 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, when we talk about the game, I'll talk about. But I saw it right away, and I have no skin in the game anymore. I jumped out of my chair as an FCAC fan, like whoa, hold on, something big just happened, and nothing happened. Like I'm sure I was not as mad as the St. Joe's coaching staff, but I was plenty upset watching it.
Well, I did talk to Joe Delavecchia after you gave me the information and after I was able to get some copy of the video, but we'll get to that shortly. First of all, a good show for you as we break down opening weekend. Joining us a little later, tackling machine from Greenwich, linebacker Justin Carroll. I was at Greenwich's win over Fairfield Prep Friday night, and every time in the first half it seemed there was a tackle. Number 6 from Greenwich had his arms wrapped around the ball carrier, so he's going to join us. And I actually have a little bit of news for him that I just found out about his coach. So we're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff today. And then joining us also, really big win over Notre Dame of West Haven. He told me this was a rebuilding year for his team at Grip It and Rip It. And every time I've seen him subsequently, the outlook keeps getting getting better. And after a win over Notre Dame West Haven, it's certainly an auspicious start. And that's Fairfield Ludlow coach Mitch Ross. Sean, I want to, before we get to Bridgeport Central and the end of a 61-game losing streak in their 21-8 win over Wilbur Cross yesterday, which I think for everybody might be the favorite of the FCAC's 12 wins. Certainly if you're a neutral fan, yeah, you have to look at it that way. But I always feel week one, we don't know what to make of these wins yet. Certainly in the short term, it's great, and you want to win every game. What it means for the long term, it takes 2 to 3 weeks before you really can get a feel for who's good and who isn't.
Yeah, that's true, you know, because, you know, we know the teams in our league, you know what I mean? So week one is the Alliance. You know, we don't really know out of our conference who's going to be strong this year, who's going to be not. So there's, you know, a couple things on paper that look like, man, that's a fantastic win. You know, but it might be a couple weeks down the road, be like, okay, that wasn't as big as of a win as we thought. And the other way around, you know, there might be a loss that we look at and be like, hey, that was a terrible loss. But then again, a couple weeks down the road, be like, okay, that seems better than we thought. You know, the good thing is all the teams got 9 more games, so they have 9 more weeks to prove themselves one way or the other.
But the bottom line is we do have 12 teams that won, and again, whether they were what their significance will be remains to be seen. But right now, all they know is the significance of being 1-0. Sean, you're the perfect person to discuss Central's 21-8 win with 61 game losing streak. It goes back to 2017. You've been a football coach, and you are still a teacher at Norwalk High School. Yeah, I I have a lot of admiration, not just for the win yesterday, but for all the kids and all the coaches and everybody who played football at Bridgeport Central during the 61-game streak. It's easy not to be part of a program that I'm sure even their classmates look down on, and I'm sure they got teased, and they've gone out there every week and they've tried their best. Brendan Miller took over. This is his third year with the team. I doubt that there were a great many applicants for it. A lot of coaches will apply for jobs that not necessarily their first choice, but they want to get head coaching experience. But you've only had one bad year, and it came with an asterisk to it. But yeah, you're around the school. What's it say about these kids that stuck it out? And what do you think that feeling was when that final gun went off yesterday?
You know, Dave, it's credit to the kids, and I can just speak for Norwalk High. The staff, when I say staff, I'm talking about the teachers and, you know, the adults in the school. They're always very supportive, you know, always. But it's their friends and the other students. Those are the ones who are really coming down on the kids. You know, in my last year, I actually said it at the banquet. It's very easy to show up to practice every day when you have a winning record. It's very hard to show up to practice every day when you're going through some struggling times. And, you know, I'm sure these kids work their butts off. So it is very, very hard to stay motivated to get through it, you know, but this is exactly what Bridgeport Central has did. And, you know, Coach Miller did a great job, you know, in this off season, getting kids out. You know, Dave, I help out the track team, and Bridgeport Central this past year, they had three or four kids do the triple long jump. I'm like, wow.
One of them caught the two right. touchdown passes yesterday.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
Okay.
Newton caught two touchdowns. And I'm like, why don't these kids play anymore? You know, when Catalina was there, all these kids were playing. Now they're just not coming out anymore. You know, Bridgeport Central has athletes. You know, they just got to get them to get out there and play football. You know, but, you know, Coach Miller did a great job week one, I can tell you that.
Yeah, shout out. I have a lot of respect. I've talked to him. Mostly at Grip It and Rip, it's where they've always been, and you know what? I don't know what the rest of the season holds for them. It remains to be seen. And again, it they play Bassett next week. Hopefully, this is not going to be their only win, and hopefully, it gets to the point where we start seeing a couple of wins a year, and maybe we, you know, you brought up Dave Catalina. He should be in the FCAC Hall of Fame for his 9-year run and what he did to that program and helping it win and compete regularly for FCAC championships. I've always thought, you know, for those 9 years, he did as good a coaching job maybe as anybody.
I agree 100%. What Dave did at Bridgeport Central, I personally think in that span, out of all the coaches, was the best coaching in the league. And it's not a knock on any of them, because obviously we have legends in our league. It's not a knock on any of those guys, and they know how I feel about them. But what Dave did at Bridgeport Central for that run is second to none. And, Dave, real quick, if Central gets by Bassett and Ward gets through Bullard Havens, they play each other week three. So that means one of those teams could be 3-0.
It's certainly possible. And Ward was one of the schools we'll get to. And I wanted to give a little bit of an overview, but in light of some of the things that came up over the last half hour and you spurred it, I think we should take a break here and then let's come back and unpack the end of a wild St. Joe's Hand game. Hand came away with a 30-28 win on a touchdown pass on the last play of the game. And you noticed some things, and why don't we'll talk about it on the other side. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC. Okay, we're back. Let's get to it. St. Joe's, a wild game to knock off the end of the Alliance weekend. 5 lead changes, 3 in the last 2 minutes and 50 seconds, culminating in a great drive by Daniel Hand, 80 yards in the last minute 10. And on the last play of the game, we got Bobby Ray hitting a 7-yard touchdown pass to Luca Boyce. And it gave Daniel Hand a 30-28 comeback win over St. Joe's. I'll start with you, Sean. You picked it up. You can initiate the discussion.
Yeah, so, you know, I was not there, but I watched all the clips. And on the last play of the game, whenever I see somebody that wide open, I'm like, okay, it must have been a blown coverage. Like somebody, you know, somebody was on the wrong page or something like that. And that was the angle I saw from behind the end zone. And then more clips started to pop up. And I'm like, wait, it was not a pass behind the line of scrimmage. You look at and Dave, you're better with names than I am. Number 11 is flying out to cover the running back. And then number 11 is nowhere to be seen in the screen. So you see a different angle. Hands outside wide receiver, number 2 wide receiver. He comes down, doesn't even attempt to run a route. He just blocks number 11. Like, everybody has that play, and when the receiver puts their hands up, makes it look like they're running a route. This kid did not do that. He ran straight into number 11, stopped his feet, blocked him, and, you know, St. Joe's was running man-to-man defense, and that's how the guy was open. And, you know, obviously there's missed calls that happen and it happens, but it's just unfortunate when there's a missed call that literally cost the game. It decided the outcome of the game. So
you gave me this as my ride in here as we're discussing the show. You know, we always talk the night before, and then on my ride in, and then as soon as I got to the parking lot, I was just about here. I checked with somebody who sent me video of that, and also the play before, which was a pass interference call. That wasn't a pass interference. And then I called St. Joe's coach, Joe Delavecchia. Joe didn't want to say anything. Didn't want to get into trouble. Didn't want to spur any controversy. But I'll just say I don't think that Joe necessarily disagrees with anything that you said or noticed. And I think apparently somebody had video where you could actually hear the coaches up top calling it out as it happened.
Yeah. Like I said, Dave, when I first watched it, when somebody's that wide open, I always want to see why. Was it a beautiful play design? Like, what was it? And then when I saw the different angles, I'm like, oh, no. It was just they didn't cheat. It's not like, you know, nothing like that. But it was like it was just a blatant pick play, which is illegal. You know, if a kid caught the ball behind the line of scrimmage, that's different. If the kid put his hands up like he was trying to catch a pass, that's different. But he just came straight down and legit just blocked number 11, St. Joe's middle linebacker.
Yeah, it's a tough way to lose a game. And it was quite a wild game. It started out kind of slow and picked up steam, and then – the very end of the game just was pretty wild, and we're kind of talking about the controversy there. First though, credit to Bobby Ray, the hand quarterback, in his first start, and he did a masterful job of driving down the field. They only first 7 plays they gained 15 yards, and I'm watching and I'm saying, what are these guys doing? They're going drips and drabs. They need a touchdown. They're down 4. I was very surprised at the slow pace of moving downfield. And then all of a sudden, and this no penalty on this play. This was just Bobby Ray absolutely got smacked and hit a 31-yard pass play to get them downfield to put them in the situation there to win the game. And I asked him after if he saw the completion, and he said no, he just saw the receiver in the area. So that was just a real ballsy drive by the quarterback and Hand just to get themselves in a position to be able to tie the game. And yeah, like you said, it's a tough way to — You've been in those situations too, where things like that happen. When you're a coach, how do you deal with it? And How do you, you know, the kids are going to hear about it. The kids are going to see the video. What's the start of practice going to be like? Obviously, Joe's going to be most upset about, he was very unhappy with the way the team played and thought it should have been a win, not just a win, but maybe be a little bit more comfortable. But how do you start practice tomorrow?
You know, I'm sure the coaching staff already met. I'm sure they broke it down. I'm sure they got everything out of their system that they need to. But Dave, you know, football, you only have 10 games. So if you let this resonate, you know, it's going to be a problem. You know, Joe is one of the best, if not the best coach in the league. He's going to be prepared, you know, and I read his quotes after, you know, he's not going to put blame on anybody. Like he said, he's like, we had a week and a half of terrible practice, you know? So I'm sure those kids on Monday, you know, tomorrow, I'm sure they're going to be flying around practice ready to go. You know, they come back next week, you know, I know they're not as good as they, you know, have been in the past, but Richfield's never a team that you can look over. And if they do, you know, it's going to be a long afternoon next Saturday. So, but Joe and his guys, they'll get the boys ready. It's going to stink. It's going to sting. All that stuff is going to happen, but like you just have to get over it.
Yeah, I've been around enough. I'm guessing the talk starts like something, you know, yeah, we think it was a penalty, but we never should have been in a position where a questionable call could have affected the outcome. You know, that game should have been, if we played with better intensity, if we execute better, then we would never in that situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And there were some, I'll tell you what, they had wide receivers open. They thought they could play the long ball, and they had wide receivers open. And H.T. Jones, the St. Joseph quarterback, struggled with his accuracy a little bit. He hit a couple of really nice, a couple of nice bombs, and he overthrew a few receivers. That'll come, I think, especially with the experience he's had. And they, I guess a lot will depend on the opponent, but they had guys open, and in the series that, and credit to St. Joe's because they went ahead with 1:10 to go on Jones' one-yard run, and that was set up. He had missed a receiver two plays earlier who was wide open, and then he was pressured. He maneuvered in the pocket and set himself and hit Jake Rios with a 44-yard pass that got them down at a 3-yard line and put him in position. So I know one of the things Joe talked about, he thought his offensive line struggled a little bit, and they played Danbury next Saturday, and Danbury had 13 sacks yesterday. Or yeah. Friday night, excuse me.
Yeah, 13 sacks. That's that. You know, if he thinks their offensive line's struggling, that's going to be a tough matchup.
Yeah, Brandon Essen coming to town. That's not somebody you want visiting.
Yeah, that's not fun at all. So, but they'll be prepared. They'll be ready to go. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, you know, we're going to bounce around to some teams, and I have Danbury on there. And we all saw on Twitter last night, or X, or I still call it Twitter. But Augie Thierry, their coach, posted a video of all 13 sacks, and I texted with him. Four different players had 3 sacks, and he put out there, and I'm sure he went to the record book. I didn't get a chance to go look and verify it, but he said it was second most sacks ever by a team in a game.
I mean, 13 sacks is a lot. You know, the fact that that's not number one is crazy. Maybe, you know, Bloomfield with Dwight Freeney, you know, maybe they had more, but like, you know, you know, that front line for Danbury is not fun. They had to, you said his name, I'm terrible. The kid going to Maine.
Brandon Essen.
Yeah, he had a big day. So, you know, I have 2 games circled for this weekend, and that's one of them.
Yep, and the other one is your boy Easton Pace, who we'll get to in a second. But We won't get to let's just talk a little bit, and we'll talk more about it after, but with Jack Carroll coming on. The other game, Handen Prep was two top 10 teams, and the other was Greenwich and Fairfield Prep, and Greenwich with a 31-14 win. Looked good. Hurt themselves with some penalties or some, as Tony Morello said, the coach, some self-inflicted wounds, but Phil Tarantino came in his first start, a sophomore, and he went 12-for-19, 170 yards. He had three touchdown passes. He had a pair of interceptions, but a very promising performance for a sophomore in his first start. And then Hector Lopez, 124 yards rushing. Most of it was of the grinding out kind, but Cardinals number two in the first poll. They look like the Cardinals.
Yeah. They look very good on both sides of the ball. And you know, I saw a thing that they said that this is their fourth starting quarterback in 4 years. You know, so it's common to go through some nerves. You know, Coach Morello, you know, he said it. We have some self-inflicting wounds. They will clean that up. I guarantee it was just a lot of week one nerves. You know, they're playing a very tough Fairfield Prep team, you know, so they got the cobwebs out, you know, they'll be fine the rest of the way.
And I talked with a couple of Greenwich coaches beforehand, and they thought their speed was going to get Prep, which is a very, you know, Prep has a lot of size this year. They thought the speed would give Prep trouble, and it certainly did. And then, yeah, their defense was just those three linebackers with are just swarmed to the ball, and like I said, Jack Carroll, I went and looked at Max Preps, and they had a few stats, but they didn't have the defensive stats yet. I don't know how many tackles, but he was part of that 100 tackle triumvirate last year. But he was in every time. It gets to the point, you know, we watch games differently in the media now, and we're so busy taking video and stuff. But I'm looking at tackles, and every time the guy getting up is number six.
Yeah. And if he's getting all those tackles, you know, he's getting credit for everything, which he should, you know. But that if you're getting that many tackles, that means the four guys in front of you are doing what they're supposed to do, you know. So it's a teammate effort, but those three guys across behind, those three linebackers, it has to be the best tandem in the state at that position.
Yep, absolutely. Well, why don't we take a break here? When we come back, we'll talk about Jack Carroll because he's going to be joining us. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC. And we've been talking a little Greenwich football. I was at Cardinal Stadium Friday night, and I hope he can tell us how many tackles he had. And I owe him an apology because I called him Jack before, and I always get him mixed up with Jack Kelly, his teammate. But joining us right now is Justin Carroll, linebacker, Greenwich. Justin, how you doing?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. Hey, before I don't want to forget this, so we're going to start out. I got a little dirt on your coach right before I came on the air. If you want to have a little fun in practice tomorrow, I have my producer Paul Goodman was at media night, and he recognized your coach and said that apparently he's got a little bit of an acting background. Did you know that?
Oh yeah, that's the thing to do in his free time.
Okay, I didn't know if that was known. I think I knew it and I forgot it, but I was going to say, you know, I asked the team for trivia who played Jean Valjean in Les Miserables his junior year at Greenwich.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I saw his pep talk to you after the game. I think he could play a lot of different people.
Yeah, you can.
All right, well, let's talk football. First of all, you've had a day and a half to digest it. What are your thoughts on Friday night's win over Fairfield Prep?
I thought it was just like a great win. I'm very proud of both sides of the ball. And I thought, you know, even though we made some mistakes, you know, we're going to have a high ceiling this season. And I'm really excited for, like, what's to come.
Yeah, I thought when you struggled, it was the first prep score came off a roughing the passer penalty. And then to prep's credit, they took advantage and got their running back outside for a nice score. But you don't want penalties seemed to be what hurt you guys the most.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also their second score was after a 15-yard penalty, too.
Yep. That one was more of a drive coming out. But you know what? Every time they scored, you guys had an answer, and that says something also.
Yeah, I agree.
Have you found out how many tackles you had yet?
No, I haven't. They haven't come out yet on Max Preps.
Do you have a guess about what you think you had?
I'm guessing probably around 15, maybe 12 to 15 range.
I was going to say it's got to be at least a dozen because we're watching games differently and we're trying to get video and we're trying to be exact on how many yards is gained, and so we miss out on a lot of things. But after a while, Greenwich is flying to the ball, and every time you're getting up on top of the ball carrier. What's this line playing with this linebacker trio? You guys have gotten a lot of publicity and deservedly so. What makes you guys so good as a unit?
I think we work together very well. Like, our chemistry we've been building this last, like, 2 years. And all this off season, you know, we've both been, or all three of us have been lifting together in the early mornings before school. And just kind of our chemistry together is what really builds us.
I know part of the answer you're going to give credit and deservedly so to your defensive front, but when you're making so many tackles, what do you? I mean, obviously, a lot of it also it's a combination of instinct and natural athletic ability, but to be able to tackle and get to the ball carrier like you do, what does that take? Are you able to put it into words?
I mean, yeah. So, like, before we play, I know I, like, think about my assignment, my gaps, and what I have to do, and I just, if I see the ball carrier, you know, I see it and I react, you know. I gotta trust my vision, trust my eyes, and that's mostly just what I try to play like.
Sean, I'll let you jump in here.
Hey, Justin, how are you? First of all, great job on Friday night. Always root for FCAC teams when they're playing non-FCAC teams. Question, so Dave kind of alluded to it. What's it like playing with Jack and Santi? Like, does it take a little pressure off you knowing, like, okay, like, obviously you want to be on your A game, but does it take some pressure off knowing that you have two guys that are, you know, just capable as they are?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And I know, like, if I mess up or something, you know, Santi and Kelly, they both can have my back, and that goes for them too. They know that I have their back if anything goes wrong. And I also, like, I trust them in their abilities and what they can do on the field.
And my follow-up to that is, you know, when you have 12 to 15 tackles, I'm sure a lot of them have to do with the four guys up front. You know, drawing double teams and stuff like that. What's it like playing behind those guys, knowing that, hey, most of the time, you know, we have clean shots at the ball carrier?
Yeah, you know, it helps when you have a good D-line. You know, that opens windows for us, and we can really play our best game when they're doing their best, too. It kind of, like, works as one unit together.
Yeah, and you know, credit to the whole team, but especially that group right there. I told Dave before, I think the you three linebackers are the best tandem in the state at that position, you know, and you hold the Fairfield Prep was a very prominent offense at around 200 total yards. Last year, the quarterback threw for over 2,000. He held the 82 yards with the INT. So, you know, whatever you guys are doing, keep it up, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tarantino steps in, a quarterback, a sophomore. This is, as Sean mentioned before, fourth quarterback in 4 years. But the other three were seniors, and he was the big unknown coming into the team. We knew you had a lot back on both sides. 12 for 19, three touchdowns, did have two interceptions, but I thought, and I'm sure you agree, a real, real promising opening start against a very good opponent.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I thought Phil played really good. I thought he stepped up. You know, first game as a sophomore is always pretty scary, but I thought he kind of kept it calm, cool under pressure, and really just played his game.
What kind of characteristics does he have that helped him earn the starting job?
You know, he's very hardworking, and he's very, he's always calm, always chill, like in the locker room and stuff. It doesn't really say much, but when he's on the field, you know, he just kind of dominates, and that's what he does.
Well, actually, two breakout players this year. Last year, I had Andrew Esposito. I had one, and he plays both sides of the ball, but we saw him catch a touchdown pass. But one of the guys I think could be a breakout player this year, and especially as a tight end as well as defensive lineman, is Michael Golden. He's 6'7". And he gets the ball. If he gets the ball in his hands with a little bit of steam, I'm not sure who's bringing him down.
Yeah, yeah. Mike's a big part of our offense and defense. You know, tight end. We try and feed him the ball as much as we can because he's just huge, huge person. You know, great kid. And on defense, he can really set that edge. So yeah, he's definitely a person to look out for.
And then the other person. Have you started watching any Norwalk tape yet?
A little bit, yeah. I know this quarterback's supposed to be really good.
That's Sean here teaches at Norwalk, and he told me in the offseason, watch this kid, Easton Pace. He's legit. 205 yards passing, 180 rushing, three touchdowns rushing, three passing. I'm going to talk with Sean about him, but it'll be, yeah, Norwalk's coming in, and he's going to present a challenge for you.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, we just play our game and, you know, nothing really is going to stop us.
I think you and New Canaan are in the same place where you believe if you guys don't make mistakes and play your game, you're going to be pretty tough to defeat.
Yeah, I agree.
As I finish up with you, you're number two in the preseason poll. You guys have a target on your back. You're the heavy favorite to repeat in Class Double L. When you're in that position, is it you got a bullseye on you? Is it what kind of mindset do you take? Everybody's coming up. Everybody wants to give their A game against you. How do you handle that kind of pressure?
Yeah, I feel like it kind of pushes us to work a little harder. You know, maybe like that last sprint, you think about how everyone's trying to beat you that last rep, you know, you kind of grind it out. And for me, that's kind of pushes me to go a little bit harder every day, especially at practice and stuff, knowing that people are going to come after us and try and overthrow us.
Well, Justin, a great opener by you, a great opener for the Cardinals, and I'll be coming to see you again next Saturday afternoon. So congrats on the start. And good luck to you the rest of the way, and thanks for taking a little time here to join us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay. Thanks, Justin. That was Greenwich linebacker Justin Carroll. We're going to take a break when we come back. Sean and I will continue to bounce around the league. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC. Okay, we're back, and thanks to Justin Carroll and we mentioned Easton Pace and Sean. I remember sitting out having lunch with you, having dinner with you this summer, talking about the league and talking about our show. And you've been I've heard Easton Pace, Easton Pace, Easton Pace. And after yesterday, I think we're going to be hearing a lot about Easton Pace and his strong performance in Norwalk's opening win. You were there. Tell me about it, and tell me about him.
The one word I'm just going to say is electric. You know, it looked like he was fouled up. You know, you see him sprinting down the sideline. His first, it ended up not being a touchdown, but his first long completion, he's scrambling back and forth. Again, it looks like he's wrapped up. He pops out, and then he hits
Gordon for a long pass. The word I can say is absolute. He's absolutely electric.
What you just look at those numbers? Is it someone kind of player you're looking pass first, but you better have somebody spying him because he can take off and run.
Every coach will tell you the hardest quarterbacks to prepare, the hardest offenses to prepare for is a dual threat quarterback, because you can have the perfect coverage, you can have everything great, and then next thing you know it, you know, you have them backed up for a 6-yard loss. Next thing you know, it's a 6-yard gain, you know, or it's hard to prepare for. And, you know, he is only a sophomore, but man, he's good.
How big is he?
If I had to guess, I'm going to say probably 5'11", you know, maybe 180, 190 in that area. He's okay. A brick. He's a solid block of muscle, I can tell you that.
And they beat East Hartford 41-21, a nice start to the season. What else about Norwalk? Because they got to go into Greenwich, and they're stepping up big time in weight class. What were your other impressions about the Bears in week one?
I thought their defense was outstanding, you know, and they had this kid on their defense, Sean Morgan, who in the Wilton game last year, there's a big 2-point conversion, Sean made the stop, and Sean Patrick Bowley was right next to me. I said, Sean, he's the kid that needs to be in your players to watch next year. He's probably 6'2", you know, 215 pounds, like a freak athlete, but in the first quarter, I think he had 2 sacks, a tackle for a loss, and a forced fumble. They just couldn't block him. But, you know, defensively, they looked very good. You know, East Hartford scored. They couldn't move the ball. They hit a fade on one play, and they hit a deep post on another and a garbage time touchdown. But East Hartford cannot move the ball at all. So Norwalk's defense looked very good.
I know you didn't. You read about but didn't see Greenwich, but this team looks a lot like your normal Greenwich team. How does Norwalk size up? Do they have a puncher shot against them, and what are they going to have to do?
Yeah, so when I was a coach, we always had this term, weather the storm, okay? Take their best punch, you know. Sure, when you go into halftime, it's still a game. You know, you don't want to go into halftime down 3-4 scores. You make sure it's still a game at halftime. You know, and then, you know, make them panic just a little bit, you know, just see what happens. Because, you know, and Justin's not wrong what he said, but he just said, he's like, if we play our game, nobody could beat us, you know. So, like, so they're going into the game right now saying, hey, you know, we should beat Norwalk, which probably they should. So if you go in at halftime and it's a close game, you know, next thing you know, maybe some fingers start pointing. Maybe some people start, you know, getting a little tense, a little tight. So just make it a game in the second half. Give yourself a puncher's chance, you know, and then, you know, play from there.
Yeah, I would think the one thing that will make it a little bit more difficult for Greenwich is the fact that you have a dual threat quarterback, and that you got to be prepared for your pass defense, but you also got to contain and not let him hurt you with his legs.
Exactly. And like I said before, Dave, you could have the perfect defense plan. You could have all four receivers covered. You can have a great pass rush. And next thing you know, there's a little seam and he's gone. So it just makes it so tough to prepare for. But again, I know Coach Morrell and, you know, the Justin, Santi, Jad, they'll be ready. They will be ready, I can tell you that.
We're not going to talk about them too much this week, but just bouncing around again, the other top 10 teams in the opening poll all came away with wins. Andrew Esposito, only 3 touchdowns in season opening, 30-10 win for New Canaan over Newtown. An impressive shutout by Darien, 35-0 against Naugatuck. I know they got... they got off to a little bit of a slow start, some penalties, and then they were able to get things going. And Darien's of interest to me just because of the way everybody – that everybody was talking about them in the preseason as, you know, I don't know if I would go with Tom Petty's free falling, but yeah. People expected them to be down this year. And, you know, they were fifth in the preseason poll, and people were wondering if they were even fifth in the FCAC. I don't know. I mean, on paper, this isn't the strongest Darien team, but we talked about it in the preview. Just because we don't know the names doesn't mean that we're not going to recognize the talent. So Darien's a team of interest to me.
Yeah, you know, and it's crazy. Is this their second or third year playing Naugatuck now? Like, I know they played them a couple times recently, I believe. You know, so whenever you win by a score of that margin, you're doing something right. I don't know much about Naugatuck. I can't sit here and lie. Like,
they don't really have a great track record recently. They have a good track record of where they're seated, not the results in the state tournament.
Yeah, and Dave, on a quick sidebar, you know, I think the CT Alliance games are fantastic, but I really think they dropped the ball. You know, everybody wants to see Ansonia play in FCX school. How do we go to an Alliance and Ansonia is not playing in FCX school? I think they really dropped the ball on that one. Anyway, that's
they look at it at class size, and whenever we talk to schedules, that'll be part of this discussion with our guest on the other side, who's patiently holding right now, Mitch Ross. Mitch is amongst many other things the king of schedules, but yeah, it's. The Alliance does a great job, and they've been beating their chest on social media, and they do a good job. But we'll talk a little bit about the scheduling there. But wins and Staples, Coach Matt Jackloff, in his first game, a 17-3 win over Glastonbury. Trumbull, a 12-3 win over NFA, and what stood out there, Luke McDermott, three interceptions in the game. And then Fairfield Ward, a team that struggled a little bit last year, they beat Simsbury 42-20. And Della Vecchia, a big game at quarterback. And then Ryan Love, I think, is a name we're going to have to keep an eye on. He had four touchdown passes for Ludlow in the big 38-35 win over Notre Dame of West Haven. And Ludlow got into the state playoffs last year for the first time, and they played a very, very tough opponent, and they were in a back-and-forth, high-scoring game, and came out with a very good-for-the-future as well as the present victory.
Yeah, you just went down the line, Dave. The other one I think we got to point out, Wilton had a nice win.
Yeah.
I don't know about Bethel, but 42-0 is always a good score. You know, that's a tough game. I'm sorry. Earlier on the show, I said I actually have three games circled. Trumbull-Wilton, I think, could be a big one next week too. But
that is right now the most underrated big game. It's only week two, and we'll see what happens. But early on, that's an underrated big game with two teams that have high hopes and don't want to get the early loss, more even especially Trumbull with its schedule.
Right, yeah. So, you know, FCX had a great showing, great showing week one. You know, we're going to see right now when we start playing each other what happens, you know, who's real, who's not. You know, it'll weed itself out in the next couple weeks. But, you know, it's we're finally here, Dave. We finally had a kickoff. You know, we're not talking about preseason. We're not talking about this. We're here, and we're talking about real football, which is great.
Yeah, I was going to write a column Thursday. I actually wrote 300 words, and then I realized I was being too cranky about, you know, maybe it's time with Thanksgiving football. We got to start earlier and all these different changes, but I decided after 300 words, I scrapped it and decided to get on the treadmill instead. Anyhow, we're going to take a break here, and on the other side, Fairfield Ludlow coach Mitch Ross. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC. Okay, we're back, and we actually have a third half hour this year, which Sean and I love. Gives us a chance to talk more, and he's been patiently holding on. Known for his days at Darien as the offensive coordinator during state championship times, he's built the Fairfield Ludlow program into a consistent winner. And as I always say, and he never will introduce himself as my classmate at Staples High School, Falcons coach Mitch Ross. Mitch, how you doing?
Very well. Always a little bit better after a W.
Yeah, well, let's start off there. We got a lot to talk about, but talk about the win over Notre Dame West Haven, a very, very impressive debut for the Falcons.
Yeah, well, it was definitely a fun game, I think, on both sides. It was a high-scoring affair. Ryan Love managed to throw for almost 390 yards, spreading out the ball to eight different receivers. So it was very much back and forth. Probably the game came down to at the end. We recovered an onside kick and kicked a field goal, and that ended up being the margin of victory.
Let's talk still a little bit about the game. What impressed you most about the team? Obviously, you're known for your offensive creativity, and when you put up 38 points against anybody, and you have the numbers that you just reeled off with Ryan Love and the receivers, you have to be happy. And it sounds like we're going to have another entertaining Falcon team.
Yes, Ryan's the first in my 9 years now here at Ludlow. Ryan will be my first 2 year starter. He's a junior this year, but I've coached him since eighth grade, so he knows the system extremely well. He's very well versed in it. His dad, in fact, is on our staff, so we have a leg up with a quarterback who really understands the offense. And that's gone a long way. That's one reason why so many receivers catch the ball. He doesn't focus on one receiver. Instead, he goes through his reads and throws the first open guy. And the result is, he completed about 70% of his balls. In fact, the one pick that he had really was the result of a drop and should have been a completion. So he really played a masterful game. And in the end, and all through the game, we had great, great special teams play, which helped us tremendously.
You look at the score, and I haven't seen much about the game. I was following it as best I could on Twitter, but you look at it and you say, this team sounds like it's very similar to your team that got to the state playoff for the first time last year, and a lot of the teams you've had these past few years. Do you see the potential after 1 week for it being that way, at least in terms of composition?
Well, we're much younger than our team last year. We're a junior dominated team this year. Last year we were a senior dominated team. I mean, we only are bringing back two starters this year, so we're very, very young and very inexperienced. So winning the first game is a very big first step, but it's a long season, and we have a very, very tough stretch after the break, so we're certainly going to be tested.
When we first talked about the team this year, it was that grip it and rip it, and you're a straight shooter. You have the coaches who'll give a misleading read on the team. And you initially thought that this team, it could be a bit of a rebuilding year. That and again, it's probably because you had an experience and you didn't know what to expect. And then I probably asked you once or twice more, most recently at Media Day, and your feelings on the team have become increasingly positive. Has it been the case where initially you just thought you didn't know a lot about this team and particularly the line, and that as things have developed, they're showing you positive things?
Well, what happened with, as with most young teams, we started out very tentative when the summer twice a week practices started, but we worked, you know, the kids worked very, very hard, and they were very diligent, both in the weight room and on the practice field. And it showed up in the New Canaan Grip It and Rip It. We finished in second place. And then that momentum has just carried on, and we get better each practice every day. And that's our goal, to get better every day. And the kids really have come through for us, and we'll see how far they can take us. But yes, we're very happy with how the team has progressed.
I know my co-host is a big fan. We were talking about you on my ride to the studio here. Sean, how about it?
Mitch, how are you?
Very well. How are you?
Good. I still say this to anybody I talk to, the best offensive mind in the league is Mitch Ross, and we know how many good offensive minds there are in the league. Mitch, I think what you do is unbelievable.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So, Mitch, my question. So, last year, you know, you guys made the States for the first time, and, you know, and I can relate to, you know, back in Norwalk when we made States for the first time. Well, what was the feel of the program like? Are you getting more kids out now? Like, is there a buzz with the youth? What was it like after last year's season?
So last year, I mean, it's a very, very big step making the playoffs for a school that's never made it in football before. So it did generate a buzz, not just in the school, but in the community. You know, people are, you know, townspeople are very, you know, excited about the team. We have larger and larger turnouts at every game. We're expected to win, you know, the fans expect us to win most games. So it's been a lot of fun for the players, for the coaches, and for the community. You know, the hope is that we lose less and less kids to private schools over time. That remains an ongoing battle. And we just get better and better each practice and each year.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's just tremendous. And, you know, there's nothing like when the whole community backs a program. It's a great feeling. But maybe you talked about Ryan Love, understanding the offense, and you alluded to it. It was one of my questions, but you answered, you know, the fact that he threw to 8 different receivers, 4 different wide receivers, caught a touchdown. It seems like he, not to be corny here, he's really built a big bond with Liam Bond, you know. What's it like having the 2-year start? I know you already mentioned it, but like, if you could elaborate just a little bit more, you know, what's it like him connecting with the different receivers?
Well, I mean, there, you know, it's a 2-part questions. One is him connecting with different receivers. It's really the result of him going through his reads. Instead of focusing on one receiver, he's going through the reads as the offense is designed. And that's critical to maintain an offense that throws the ball a lot. You know, we can't have a ton of incompletions. We can't have a ton of turnovers. We have to keep on moving the chains. So that's part one. Part two is, you know, yes, you know, Liam Bond has, this is his second year as a starter. So he had a big game through the air. He caught 7 balls for 140 yards. But that was, you know, a lot of that was, you know, as per the offense was designed. We have to, you know, make the defense wrong. If the defense is covering the receivers, then we throw to the running back. If the defense is covering the running back, we throw to the receivers. It's really the basis on which the offense is built. And we fortunately broke out a couple, you know, long pass plays. You know, he had a 63-yard catch and reception, and Jake Palladino had a 67-yarder. So those were very big plays, and I believe we scored on every possession except for 2 during the game. So, you know, it was definitely very successful offensively, and the line did a good job protecting the quarterback. You know, we still have, you know, plenty of work to do, and we will get to that work. But, you know, this is a great first step for a young team.
Hey, Mitch, we got to take a quick break. Do you have, can you stick with us on the other side? Sure. I got a few more questions for you.
Sure.
Okay, we'll be back with Mitch Ross. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC. Okay, we're back for the last few minutes of the show, and Mitch Ross is sticking with us. Mitch, schedules, you're the guru on schedules, and the FCX schedule is very topical. But real quickly, just the Alliance schedule. Sean brought up before, everyone loves the Alliance games, and there's some thought that there may be still a little disparity with the schedule. And what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I too love the Alliance games, and I would really like it if it was actually expanded. I don't know, and I doubt that'll ever happen. But the Alliance games really provide for some of the best football over the year. You know, it's different matchups. The matchups are usually, not always, but usually, you know, fair. You get an equal team, so it really compares one conference to the other. You know, unfortunately, there are some conferences that don't want to participate fully or don't want to participate at all. And I'd like to see the CIAC, you know, incentivize all teams to play as many Alliance games, you know, as reasonable. You know, obviously, nobody wants to do away with conferences, or not many people want to do away without conferences, but I don't think anybody would object to, you know, most coaches wouldn't object to having three or even four Alliance games, as long as they were scheduled fairly and provided entertainment for the fans and a good football game for the players and coaches.
Okay, more so I want to talk about the FCX schedule and the effort that's been made to provide more balance, more of the traditional powers playing each other more often, and the teams that have had weaker recent seasons playing each other, so we don't have running clocks and everybody's got a fair chance to win. The general sentiment's been that the league made a really, really good move in what it's doing, but that maybe it went a little bit too far to one end than it should have, and it could kick it back just a bit, while at the same time, yeah, everybody's applauded the league for the effort it's made, and it's a first-time go. What's your read on it?
So, yeah, I agree with the general sentiment. I think it did go too far. It makes it very difficult now how they've set it up for teams in the second tier to make the playoffs. Those are the teams that are hopeful to make the playoffs. It made it very, very difficult. I mean, all you have to do is look at Trumbull's schedule. And, you know, they have a killer schedule. They were hopeful to make the playoffs, and hopefully they still will. But, you know, they have quite a tough road to go through to make it. And there's a very big drop-off between the schedules of teams number 5 through 8 and teams number 9 through, you know, 12 or whatever. If you look at the difference between Trumbull, which was ranked the number 8 team, and the number 9, 10, and 11 team, there's a very, very big drop-off. And so we could balance that out much better to be a little bit more fair to all teams. You know, I think in general, I think the coaches want the best team, with determined by however you're going to determine it, to have the hardest record, the second team to have the second hardest opponents, strength of schedule, the third, the 16th. And I think everybody is on board with that to continue. It's in the implementation and how exactly you do that, you know, the devil's in the details. But I do think that people do appreciate the fact that the strength of schedule should follow the success of the program. And you know, it was the first year, so, you know, things will change moving forward. And the hope is that there are tweaks made and things get better and better. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the FCAC is well represented in the playoffs, and this doesn't hurt the FCAC in the playoffs. And I think that's generally everybody's worry. You know, the worry is, you know, for most teams, it's, you know, other than the super strong teams, you know, the goal for many of these teams is making the playoffs. You know, a lot of them realistically don't have great chances to win states, but making the playoffs can be huge for, I would say, all the middle teams. You know, they just, you know, they don't have to make it every year, but they just want to be competitive and be in the fight, you know, every other year or every third year. And I think that's what we should, you know, try to make sure that we're not making the obstacles too great. I mean, I believe Trumbull plays 4 of the top 5 teams or 6 of the top 7 teams.
Trumbull's the one team that really got screwed with this new schedule system.
Yeah, I'm going to interject here, Mitch, because I know you won't say it, but I'll say it for you. Your schedule is unbelievable. You know, Notre Dame, West Haven, Shelton, Wilton, Trumbull, Greenwich, St. Joe's, Staples. So there's a couple teams that I really think – I think you guys and Trumbull really got the raw end of the deal on this.
Yeah, it's a tough schedule. that's what I'll say about it. And, you know, and we'll deal with it. We'll play, you know, we'll play the games. And, you know, it's definitely a tough schedule for a team. You know, we're not a platoon team. You know, we don't have that size of the team that allows us to do that. So what happened, people don't realize, but last year what happened, by the time we get to the playoffs, there's only 5 days rest. Out of my top 11 players, which is basically all my two-way starters, 7 of them were hurt but before that game. And they weren't terrible injuries. You know, they all were trying to play through it, but by the second half, all 7 were out. So, you know, we went in this, and it was a game through one half, and by the second half, we were finished. You know, we just couldn't maintain it at all. You know, we had our twos in general, and they were doing a courageous job, but they just don't have the talent that our number ones have.
Well, Mitch, you've done a tremendous job, and it's got to take a lot of pride for you to look up in the stands Friday and nights and see what kind of fan section you have there, especially compared to your first days there. So congratulations on the job you've done. It's exciting to see the start that you had, and that Ludlow will hopefully continue to stay on the radar all the way through. So good luck, and thanks for taking the time here.
All right, thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
You too. That was
all right.
Ludlow coach Mitch Ross, and just piggybacking on that quickly, Sean, you know, I think overall the emphasis should be what the league is trying to do. You know, the first year you're going to have some blips here or there, but just the fact that the attempt the league has made should be applauded most.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, the fact that they're sitting down doing this is credit to the league. And going back to, you know, Dave Schultz said in the article, he's like, we know we're going to have to move things around, but at least we're moving in the right direction. So the fact that they're just trying it, it's well done on their part.
Yep. Hopefully they'll do a little bit of fine tuning. The one thing that'll be interesting is with this new schedule, you may the best. The weakest of the best teams that is of state tournament breed may have a hard time getting in, and the best of the weakest teams, if it can run the gauntlet against like teams, could have a shot at running at winning and getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, there's other tweaks too that I would like to see happen. Like, to me, get rid of the class size, get rid of them. Okay, you know, there are L schools that are going to be like New Canaan should be double L. Darien should be almost do like what basketball does, tier them. If you're in this level, you're in tier one state playoff, tier two. So that way, you know, you can move things around and do stuff. And I don't know, they're moving in the right direction, but I still think there's more to be done.
Yep, I agree with you. We got the quick time we have left, Wilton Trumbull, real interesting game. I think that's the big one coming up. And then Norwalk against Greenwich is the most interesting game in terms of let's see what Norwalk and Easton Pace is able to do against Greenwich.
Yeah. I think Charlie Wilton's a big one. You know, whoever comes out of that one, you know, they're sitting pretty at 2-0. Greenwich Norwalk, that's the interesting one. I also have Danbury St. Joe's.
Yeah, that's number three.
Yeah, I want to see that pass rush. You know, against St. Joe's, I want to see how they handle it, things like that. But you know, besides those three games, there's really not much else on the docket. Let's see how Norwalk and Easton Pace do against Greenwich, the number two team in the state. You know, let's see Trumbull and Wilton. Let's see them knock around, see who comes out on top. And let's see if St. Joe's can handle Danbury's pass rush.
All right. Well, Sean, I'm digging these extra 30 minutes. So what do you say we do it again next week?
I'm in.
Okay. That's this week's episode of Sunday Morning Quarterback. Again, thanks to Justin Carroll, Mitch Ross. Thanks to Sean. Thanks to Paul Goodman in the booth and his thespian advice. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday.